It's Sunday morning, time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you very much for joining me. Hope you enjoy this morning's show. And as we move into spring, I want to move naturally to the subject of fish, which is on a lot of our minds. It's not how to go fishing or where to go fishing, but overall recreational strategies. So I'm going to start with that, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time on what's taking place regulatory-wise, and also talk a little bit about our world's oceans, which continue to be a dumping ground, which is so sad for garbage. Recent headline was Tide Turns for Fishing Enthusiasts in the USA Today. A number of trade publications also picked up on it. The subheadline, it was Trump lists restrictions imposed under President Obama. There are three cases where the Trump administration now, through executive order, has increased recreational access for fishermen in huge areas. All up and down the East Coast and in the Gulf of Mexico. Those of us living here in Illinois, well, how does that affect us? Fortunately, we were never under the restrictive fishing regulations that were put in place by the previous administration. But if we want to travel and fish in Florida or anywhere up and down the East Coast or in the Gulf of Mexico, it's a enormous deal. One of the promises of the Trump administration was that the multi-billion-dollar recreational sport fishing industry would be expanded under his administration, that recreational opportunity would be increased, and that if science indicated that there should be a restriction on it, it would take place. But other than that, that opportunity should be increased across the board. And so that's what's happened. And the recreational Fishing Alliance, the American Sport Fishing Association, are all behind the what is happening. The global fisheries resources of the world, obviously, by and large, have been depleted enormously in recent years. But that does not mean that America's fisheries resources have been depleted enormously. So, I think what's taking place is that under the Commerce Department, they approved a plan extending the recreational fishing season for certain species of fish in the Gulf of Mexico. In one case, from red snapper, it went from 3 days to 42 days. And throughout the Atlantic seaboard, recreational fishing opportunity has been expanded as well. This does not mean that everyone's in favor of it. There are those who think that this could be the wrong approach. However, I think in this case, rather than erring on the side of caution, the interest of the recreational fishing industry is let's if we're going to err, we'll change the rules. But in the meantime, let's see if we can offer more opportunity for sport fishing. So that has been a very, very positive step for the sport fishing industry. And as I said, certainly there are those who think it's been overdone, that will be being too lax. But it's a definite, if you will, pardon the pun, sea change that's taking place between one administration and the current administration. Moving on from recreational fishing to a story that is just so awful. And I don't like to talk about sad things in the air, but the garbage dumping in the world's oceans is terrible, and it has to stop. And maybe what we're talking about here on the show this morning will help raise the awareness that we think here we are in 2018, and we're looking across America and how we handle our garbage and our waste. We are virtually alone in the world in doing so. 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to fish in Alaska, and I took a break from fishing, and I walked along the shore of the Bering Sea, in one of the most remote places on Earth, a place where, I don't know, if 10 people have walked there in the last 100 years, I'd be surprised. and they'd even dropped off by seaplane, and the rest of my party were fishing, and I just went for a walk on this desolate, isolated, but it was a beautiful day in Alaska beach, and the only thing on the beach other than me were the seagulls and the most enormous grizzly bear tracks, Alaskan brown bear tracks I'd ever seen, which certainly had my attention. Now, those were the natural elements. The unnatural elements were the sea of garbage. And here we are in a place where no one lives. We're within 1,000 miles. And the beaches were littered as though you were in one of the worst areas in Central America or someplace on the East Coast where garbage isn't picked up. It was so disgusting. And a lot of this was left over from the tsunami in Japan when so many things were broken loose and ended up in the ocean. Of course, the ocean's currents take them towards Alaska. But I'm talking about, as far as I could see, plastic bags, shoes, clothing, bottles. And the beach was just littered with plastic. And it just made you sick to your stomach. So recently when I read that the world's largest collection of garbage, ocean garbage, is still growing. It's called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, and it's a collection of plastic floating trash halfway between California and Hawaii that has grown to, it's a sickening statistic, it's grown to more than 600,000 square miles. That is larger, twice the size of the state of Texas. And this just floats out in the ocean. The winds and converging ocean currents funnel the garbage into this sort of central location, and it's where the garbage of the Western Hemisphere from Asia and also the U.S., but Central America and all the way down to South America, it goes there. It was first discovered in the 1990s, and it comes from basically the Pacific Rim, as I said, but North Asia, North and South America, it includes about, their estimates are, I don't know how they make these estimates, but I'll go with them. Almost 2 trillion pieces of garbage weighing 88 tons, the equivalent size of 500 jumbo jets. Now, again, I don't know who comes up with these statistics, but whether it's a trillion tons of garbage or, I mean, 2 trillion pieces of garbage or 1 million pieces of garbage is still disgusting. And this most recent report was published in the Nature Scientific Reports. It's what is discouraging is how quickly this continues to grow and the amount of plastic. And we look at the plastic bag bans that are taking place in certain states. And if you've ever been to Central and South America, you realize there is no garbage collection. The plastic bag garbage collection is trees. They accumulate them, or it's the wind that just blows them around. So, sadly, the Pacific Patch is growing. And it's the largest, though, of 5 such trash collections in the oceans of the world. Think about that. There are 5 enormous areas where nothing can live, where our world's garbage is just being dumped. And the sad thing is it's all in international waters, so there's really no way to clean it up. No one's stepping up to it. It's a ticking time bomb, if you will. For larger material, this material, as it breaks down, gets into the size that's too small to collect and then becomes extremely toxic and dangerous to marine life. So plastic's only been around since about the 1950s in a big way. There's no way to know how long it's going to last in the ocean, but it could remain there for quite a while. In the meantime, this garbage zone in the Pacific is growing. All the garbage zones of the world are growing. And it's sort of sad to say in 2018, when we think about how we handle our waste and things, that most of the world doesn't do that. They just throw it in the ocean, have it be somebody else's problem. So I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter. Hope you're enjoying the show. And first, though, a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers, our longtime sponsors of the Great Outdoors Show.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I hope you're enjoying the show, and I'm going to move from talking about the world's oceans being our garbage dump, which is just such a sad story, but And apparently one that nothing is being done about because they're all growing in size. These areas that are just huge as far as having garbage from around the world in them and the oceans flowing in the currents too. Something that's going to be taking place more and more. The federal courts being involved in decisions about how to manage species on the endangered species list. There was a key ruling very recently from a federal appeals court that upheld a district ruling that is going to cause the operators of the Columbia and Snake Rivers in the Pacific Northwest to increase their spring water releases from their enormous dams, or eight dams that have taken place up there over the years, to improve survival rates for juvenile salmon migrating to the oceans. And I've talked about this previously, but we're in a situation where the salmon runs of the Pacific Northwest were epic. Every big, if not bigger than the salmon runs that are currently still in existence in Alaska. But due to the hydropower that was put in beginning 60, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, with the creation of dams to make agriculture and barge traffic on the Columbia River first and the Snake River second viable, the dams virtually extinguished the salmon runs. And you went from sockeye salmon runs in the millions to sockeye salmon runs measuring 50, 75, 220 fish, depending on where you are in certain areas. And the longest hydronymous fish run in the world is the sockeye salmon run that comes out of the Pacific, up into the Columbia, up into the Snake, and it's some 850 miles from the ocean up into the tributaries of the Salmon River in Idaho, where the sockeye salmon come to Redfish Lake, but those few that are left. The longest run of its kind in the world, which was once called Redfish Lake because it was red. The color of the lake was red from all the sockeye salmon in it. So those days are gone. There are a few fish left, and what just took place was a ruling which says that you are going to have to release more water from the dam so that fish that are returning to the sea in the spring have enough of a current to enable them to go to the oceans. One of the things that's happened is the fish, whether they're coming from hatcheries or the few wild fish that are left, they move downstream and they get in these enormous lakes that are the reservoirs from all these dams, and there's very little current. So the fish become disoriented. They don't know which way the ocean is. They're no longer going downstream, and they die. So the Bureau of Reclamation and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and you know how I feel about the Army Corps of Engineers, operate these dams. And the courts have said, you're going to put more water over these dams because the survival of these fish depend on it. As you know, I'm not a radical environmentalist. I always try to look for a balance. But there is a very serious debate taking place about removing a lot of these dams, and particularly the four dams on the lower Snake River being removed. It would cause a great loss of recreation from the point of view of boating and pleasure boating, but it would not necessarily be the end of the world. And in fact, it's possible that it could bring back the salmon runs, which from a ecological and from an economic resource could be much more valuable than the subsidized grain farming that's taking place there now and the subsidized energy. So the discussion as to whether we're going to remove these dams is not going to be solved in the next few years, but what has been solved is more water is going to be put downstream. So it's going to cause people who are paying for power to generate, it comes from these power dams, to pay more for their power. So the economics are changing, and a quote here says from, of course, the Corps of Engineers says, this decision creates a new multi-million-dollar obligation for the region's ratepayers, end of quote, meaning the cheap subsidized electricity is not going to be so cheap anymore. It's going to cost more to farm. It's going to cost more to turn on your air conditioning, and that cost is the result of the environmental damage that these dams have done. So it's a huge ruling. There'll be more to come. But in the meantime, that's a fact. Salmon are going to be protected more than they were, and electrical rates in the Pacific Northwest are going up. And I do think the energy behind removing a number of the dams, which have been blocking the passageway of these migratory fish. Now for 50 and 60 and 70 years, the discussion will continue to intensify as to whether or not some of these dams should be taken out. Quickly shifting before I run out of time, I want to talk really briefly about the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which under the bill that was signed by the president a couple weeks ago, the funding has been restored. The Land and Water Conservation Fund is the excise tax. The revenues come from the excise tax on oil and gas offshore drilling, and it's to be used for fish and wildlife and public recreation. Yet the government has found many ways to use it other than that, and they have built up something like a $35 billion IOU to the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which we will never see. But in the president's budget, he knocked it down to a funding of $5 million a year. It is authorized up to $900 million a year. So basically, it was going to go away, and the oil companies that pay this royalty felt that that was wrong. The royalty that takes place only because it's supposed to go to protecting our natural resources, and instead it just goes to the federal treasury and some black hole. So Congress reversed that. They still are a fraction of the $900 million a year that's supposed to be spent, but it is a positive direction. The Land and Water Conservation Fund has been reauthorized and is funded, I think, this year to the tune of about $250 million, which for most of us is still real money. So that's a step at least in the right direction. Thank you so much for listening this morning. I look forward to speaking with you next week. I'll be in the Sea of Cortez in the meantime. And when I come back, I think I'll hopefully have some wonderful stories about migrating whales and one of the most rich mammalian sea life worlds in the world. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.